happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall. That is Beth Kuchenberger. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm actually doing so good this morning.
Wow. That's even more sunny than...
It's November. November is the month of Thanksgiving.
Yes, it is.
November is the month when we finish looking at the leaves as they turn colors.
Okay, here we go.
November is when we get to legitly start to play
Christmas. I thought you were
going to,
like, something good was going that you were going to, I don't know, I mean, say something particular.
It's November.
It's November.
It's the month of brown colors and...
Okay, now, I have no idea. Now you're just searching. I thought you were going to say something specific, like
football.
Something... Football, of course. I mean,
turkey.
Those are good things. But, you know, usually that's your general I'm sunny thing.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm doing really good. I was waiting for, like, you won the lottery or something.
I was out to lunch the other day with somebody, and we walked out of the restaurant, and it was a really sunny day. And I said, oh, I love it when the sun shines. And this person said, well, enjoy it while it lasts, because it's going to be gray from about tomorrow until February. And I said, that's not a very positive attitude. I think the sun can always shine above our heads. He said, I think that you have a different forecast than I have. I don't have that app.
Yes.
That wasn't very nice of him.
Well, I mean, he's probably lived through many a cloudy winter. I mean,
I'm so sorry, but it's your attitude that makes it cloudy. I'm just telling
okay,
you.
Okay, okay.
Listeners, if you're somewhere today and it's not very sunny, you know.
The sun is shining beyond those clouds.
It's also shining here in Cincinnati because our Cincinnati Bengals won yesterday.
They just crushed people.
And that doesn't happen so often. So let's let that sun shine on that.
It doesn't happen often. The Bengals are doing well.
I know. It's kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. It makes up for the Browns.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
The only thing that was a little dark cloud for me on yesterday is that I had a friend that was playing on the opposite team, Mr. David Nelson.
Who used to be on the Browns. He was on our show.
He is. Orphan lover that he is.
He is. He was on the Browns. You might remember he was on last summer, right before training camp started.
Yes.
And what a great story he had. And, you know, folks can go look it up on the archives and iTunes or whatever. But
great story.
He was coming off, a knee injury or something. And so... He wasn't quite ready to go when the time for the Browns came to cut players. But it was awesome that he got picked up. And now he's, like yesterday.
Eight completed passes.
Eight catches. That's pretty good.
I do like that.
Might have to pick him up on my fantasy team.
Just
to say that he was on my fantasy team.
Just to say.
I could send him a text and say, hey, David, I picked you up on my fantasy team.
So do good next week.
That's right.
I just got back from Texas last night. There's nothing like Texas hospitality. Those people are nice. I literally, on my way there, decided not to eat a meal because in Texas people feed you well all the time. I'm going to fast this meal en route because when I get there, they're going to feed me a lot.
And did they?
And they totally did.
What did they have for you?
I went to the Abilene Country Club where I had a big old buffet option. It was quite delicious.
My.
I know we ate outside and there was a big, like, stone gas fireplace, and it felt very Texas.
Wow.
I know. Little rocking chairs, big sky. It was lovely.
Again, we've said this so many times. Your life is so much more exciting than mine.
I don't think that's
I was at home yesterday laying on the couch watching football. You're like under the big sky eating a buffet somewhere on your way back from Monterey.
It was good. I love those guys. Beltway Park Baptist Church. It was a fun day with them yesterday.
Where was it?
Beltway Park Baptist Church.
Oh, wow.
Abilene, Texas.
And I saw some pictures. Like, they got really gigantic
screens
up there.
They have very big screens. Yesterday was like an international day, hence the reason I was the speaker. And they had this really cool thing. Churches listen to this idea. I think it's a really cool idea.
Okay.
They had people, nationals, in their congregation from like 10 different nations. And they all had them pray the same prayer in their own tongue. So... First, this Egyptian lady got up there, then this Hebrew guy, Mozambique, and Kenya, and Spanish. And it was by the end of it, and they had the drums going and the lights, and it was very emotional. I was picturing it like I was around the throne.
You know, we've been to, I don't know if I've talked about it on the show, but, you know, I used to be a middle school principal, and we'd take people to Monterey to serve with back-to-back. And I can remember one time being down there, and we sang a worship song in Spanish that was a familiar worship song. So we were singing in English, and the people of Mexico were singing Spanish. And so we had a debriefing that night, and this little seventh grade girl who had never been out of the country, it was her first little trip somewhere.
Yeah.
And she goes, so we're like, hey, what's your picture of the day? What did you think about? And she goes, you know, it really, God's not an American. It's like,
yes. He's not.
He's not an American. He doesn't speak English necessarily. You know, he's multilingual. So that reminds me of your story.
Sweet.
Like, you know, it's any time you can remind people that God is bigger than their cultural context, that's a good thing.
It is a really good thing. Yeah, it was a great day. We were Mike Breen recently said that all the Bible you can sum up into two words, come and go. And so yesterday I was the go part of the come and go. And I was talking to them about where all in the world that they could go. And it was the pastor got up at the end, you know, and he closed up the service and he just said, in case you didn't know, it didn't all start here in America. Like somebody came here and it was, you know, lots of cheering.
Even more particularly, he probably should have said, you may not know, it didn't all start in Texas.
Yeah, I know.
Right? You know, the people came to Texas as well.
Oh, I think that's really fun. Okay, lots going on. I was in the airplane last night flying back here to Cincinnati, Ohio, just in time to do the show this morning.
Yes.
And I was reading a little article that was in the back of the magazine, in the airline magazine, and they had this study, and I want to ask you if you think it's true.
Okay. First, I'd like to say you're the person who reads those magazines. Then.
Oh, yeah. Actually even know, like, the letter to the editor guy's
gotcha.
Name.
Okay.
And, like, where
All
he went last year.
All right. There you go.
And where he's going this year. Okay. And he said that men walk when they're – they did this study where they had men walk around a track, and they timed how fast they're walking. And basically men walk about 3.8 miles an hour, the average man.
Okay.
Okay, so then and they put two men right next to each other, and they had them walk right next to each other. And the men, when they walked next to another man, walked up to 4.4 miles an hour. So like a little aggression.
Okay.
Article started going.
So alone they walked 3.8. When they walked with another man, they were faster.
Both men, they walked faster.
Both people walked faster. Okay.
And then they put that same man, 3.8 mile an hour man, with a woman that they were not interested in, a platonic friendship.
Okay.
And the woman basically walks 3.2 miles an hour.
So she walks slightly slower on average than a man.
Yeah, it was a scientific study. They talked about her leg height and all that business.
Yes.
Okay, but anyway. So when you're not interested in the woman, you basically naturally meet in the middle. The woman walks a little bit faster, the man walks a little bit slower. It's kind of a nice little, like, we're going to come together in this.
Excellent, yes.
And then when they put the men on the track with the woman that they were in a relationship with.
Okay, someone that they were romantically linked to.
They significantly slowed down, sometimes even walking slower than the woman's natural pace. What does that tell us?
Wow.
The article had all kinds of comments about hunting and gathering. And I don't
hunting and gathering, come on. The real issue is that women are always the boss. That's the real issue. However fast or slow they want to walk, if the man is interested, he'll do whatever she wants.
Yes.
So this walking thing, if it's scientific, could be extrapolated to any area of life. Women are always the boss. Men do whatever women want.
Well, I was watching couples walk then in the airport after I got off the airplane, and I kept wanting to ask them, are you in a relationship? Are you walking slower than her? She could probably go a little
Who's
bit faster.
Who's walking faster?
Or I would watch these men walk together, and I just found myself breaking out into the giggles.
Oh, my gosh. That's what that scientific study. I don't care about the hunting and gathering. I don't care about any of that stuff.
You don't.
Women have always been the boss, always will be the boss, whatever they want. Men who want to be romantic with them will do whatever they ask.
You think so?
Think about your own. Come on.
My husband walks so fast.
I'm not talking about walking anymore. I mean, if he were here right now and we were to say, okay, who's the boss? He would say, Beth is the boss.
There is no
Yes, he would. I would do.
He would.
Yes, he would.
No. Because he wins on things. Like, for example, I just read recently that 50% of the grocery shopping is done by men. Wall Street Journal came out with a study last month. So if it was up to me, I would not buy all the groceries that we buy.
We're gonna have to have this. We got 1 minute till our break. We're gonna have to have this for the next show about grocery shopping that somehow proves that he's the boss.
We'll do it at the end of the show, not the
Okay.
Next
so
show.
Interesting show today. Gotta put out a little bit of a PG-13 warning, I guess. But we're gonna be talking about some adult topics. A couple of women are gonna be. Talking about their experiences, really. Susan Call and Shannon Dietz. Both are going to be talking about kind of how they came out of abusive relationships. Two different stories, but equally powerful. So,
we'll have to ask them how fast they walk.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, we'll hope you come back right after the break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we'll see you in about 60 seconds.
This past last summer, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to India, where I met a little girl named Shailaja from an orphanage with back-to-back. She was a new child at the home and was having a hard time adjusting. As I began playing with her and painting her nails, I was reminded that this little girl was just like my sisters back at home in the United States. Instead of a face on a photo, she became a part of my family when I realized that I could continue to help her through back-to-back's child sponsorship program. Even though she lives over 8,000 miles away, through the back-to-back sponsorship program, I can ensure that her spiritual, physical, educational, emotional, and social needs are met. The best part about the program is when I come home from school and find a letter from Shailaja. I am so thankful for God working within both of our hearts in order to lead us closer to each other and closer to Him. Visit www.backtoback.org for more information.
Life with Beth and Rob. Beth Guckenberger. I'm Rob Hall.
Happy November Saturday morning. Happy, I'm just saying it.
Happy first November. First Saturday in November. I don't know why that gets you so giddy.
It just makes me
happy. After that first segment about scientific studies talking about walking at a certain pace.
It just makes me happy.
I'm flummoxed. Hey, we do have a very interesting show today, as I mentioned before the break. Probably a little PG-13, so if you're driving around with your kids on this Saturday morning or doing whatever, you might want to, you know, we never encourage people to change the station, but you can pick us up on iTunes or whatever, but just want to be sensitive to the audience you might have in your car or in your house as you're listening to things. Susan Call is going to join us right now. Susan has written a book called A Search for Purple Cow. She was named as the 2012 Grand Prize winner of the Inspiring Voices Book Publishing Contest for this debut memoir. And for years, Susan kept the truth of her abusive marriage hidden from even her dearest friends, only speaking out after it became apparent that the longer she stayed in the marriage, the more dangerous the relationship became. So obviously, you know, as much as we'd hate to say it, there's probably a lot of women out there that are going to resonate with what Susan has to say and an important topic. So we're glad to have her here.
Good morning, Susan.
Thanks for having me, Beth and Rob.
Absolutely.
Susan, I thought we would just start by you kind of painting some of the context of the book and what personal experiences you had that motivated you to share them with other people. Would you just let our listeners know a little bit about the start of your story?
Sure. Well, my story started, I grew up going to church, but when I graduated college, I sort of put my faith on a back shelf, and I entered into marriage very naively, ignoring some warning signs that my first husband was a little bit controlling. I got swept away with everything that Hollywood says I should look for. Mm. He was very generous, took very much interest in what I was doing and where I wanted to go in life. But perhaps in a too much of a controlling way, but I didn't see it because I wanted to see that Hollywood romance. And it was really years later, when I was into my marriage and alcoholism had joined our family, along with our two beautiful children, reached a crossroads where he actually admitted to an affair and threatened to kill me if ever I tried to leave with our children.
Mm. Wow.
So it was years of it escalating to that point, but it sort of started out as a fairy tale romance and didn't end up that way.
Yeah, and in that initial part, you know, you said you entered into things naively. Were there people around you kind of speaking in your ear that this might not be a great thing, or did they kind of also buy into the fairy tale marriage kind of thing?
You know, after my book came out and I had close friends who read the book, they would revisit times in the past and say, you know, that Saturday we went out to lunch, well, I saw something and I never said anything because I thought you would be offended. So I had several people who, after reading my book, almost gained a burden because they felt like they should have said something. Hmm. And I've actually thanked them for speaking up because I use that when I speak to audiences, because many of us might know someone and we might see something that we don't like or don't think is quite right. And I may not have heard it right then, but it would have provided an open door for when I did see it, that I would have known that I could have had somebody that I could go talk to and not need to explain everything.
Yeah.
Obviously, the title of your memoir is a little interesting, A Search for Purple Cows. Could you tell us a little bit about where that came from and how that ties into your story?
Sure. Where that came from is the day that I finally did flee with my children. They were 4 and 6. They didn't know that that day was coming. So to them, I can only imagine it must have been a pretty traumatic day to be, pulled out of your home unsuspectingly. And as we're loading my van and getting ready to leave, a private investigator who had come alongside of me to help me knelt down next to them, and he sort of searched for words of something that he could say to bring some levity to the situation.
Mm.
And he looked at the two of them and said, "Be sure to look for purple cows." And they got in my van, and their eyes went up against the glass, and their eyes got wide, and they said, "Mommy, are there really purple cows where we're going?" And while he was just saying it to get them to focus on what we were traveling to and not focus on the fact that their home has just been torn apart, over the time since that moment, God has given me sort of this analogy to that is we grow close to whatever we focus on. And and on that day, as my van was pulling out, if my children were looking back and focusing on the brokenness of our family, that's what would consume them. And the same with me. If I focused on God and moving ahead and what the future held and what he held for me, that's what I would grow closer to.
Hmm.
And then sort of the other piece of that is people who knew my situation so that it sounded impossible, that I could never make it out. And God says, no, I'm the God of the impossible.
Hmm.
And so where we think there is no way, he truly makes a way. And here I am 15 years later, kept safe all these years.
Yeah. Now, I know you're also a marriage and family counselor, and I'd be interested in what you think in explaining to our listeners as well the myths around, surrounding domestic violence that you've encountered, not only personally, but probably also in interacting with lots of couples or lots of people who are were in the same situation that you were. So what myths surrounding domestic violence have you encountered in all of that?
There's two really big ones that I like to put out there, and the first one is, I think that too many people think that it only happens to a certain group. And if we don't look like that group, we don't think it can happen to us. And the reality is I have two loving parents who are married. Abuse was not part of my home growing up. Mm-hmm. I am college educated. I grew up in middle America, middle class family. It doesn't discriminate. It happens in cities and small towns alike. Statistics are the other real big myth is that it's really common, way too common, which is why I think it's important to speak out, and that is 1 in 4 women will confront this in their lifetime.
Wow.
And so we need, as a church, we need to come alongside and say it's okay to talk about this, it's okay to speak up, it's okay to be heard, because it doesn't need to be this way.
Hmm.
I know that you have forgiven your ex-husband for that part of your story. How did he feel about you putting it all in a book?
I actually haven't told him. My children are now young adults, so that the fact that they are over 18 and they no longer have any sort of court-ordered visitation with their father, I have dropped contact with him, and really my need to write the story was at a crossroads in my life. I felt God saying that one day I would share it. And 2 years ago when I started to pen it, I felt as though he said, now is the time. So I know based on the feedback that I'm already getting from people that it's reaching people and it's touching people and it's giving hope. And I know that that's what God is intent and that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah, you mentioned that that in the book that you were in another state and you had to go back for, you mentioned this idea about having to bring your kids back for visitation. And you brought your kids back for a court date. And could you relay the story about your friend suggested that you kind of change your identity and run, but you decided to return and face this in court? What went into that decision, and why did you decide on that route as compared to the other?
I have to say it was a decision that I bathed in prayer for an entire night because the court was saying you need to come back now. The people within the domestic violence community were saying, you need to run now. We need to give you a new identity. You need to not look back. And so standing at that very scary juncture, I looked to God and said, God, what would you have me do? What is it the life that you're calling me to live?
Hmm.
And through that, I felt as though he said that he would keep me safe and that one day I would share my story. And it was, I don't know that everybody would have the same answer. They would have to seek God themselves. But certainly for my journey, he opened up the path for me to go back. for my children to have some of a restored relationship with their father for many years, while God kept us safe.
Yeah. We're talking to Susan Call about her new book, her memoir, A Search for Purple Cows.
Susan, there's a verse in Jeremiah that's meant a lot to me over the years, and it's in chapter 17, and it says, if we can extract the precious from the worthless, then we can be his spokesman. So this is obviously a really worthless chapter for you, a really painful chapter for you in your life. Has there been some precious you can extract from it, some part of that piece of your story that you've come to treasure?
You know, just this morning I was reaching out to a woman who her marriage is struggling because of an affair. And I told her one of my greatest blessings in life is the relationship that I've gotten through to God through this, because during this time, I relied on God so strongly. Never in my life have I been that reliant for every breath, because my life was in danger. And so I really needed to keep my eyes on him, my ears on him, to know that everything I was doing was truly his will for that moment. So that is one of the best gifts, is my faith grew tremendously from it. And the other is my relationship with my children. You know, I've had other parents say, how is it that your teenagers never spoke ill of you? You know, they would always, you know, I could run into them. If I had to run into the high school for something, they would greet me. And everybody said, how is it that your children still admit they have parents? And it's because of during that time, just giving them what they needed and being the best mom that I could be to them, that relationship has continued into their adulthood.
I know from your bio that you've been remarried and now have a blended family with your husband, Jim. And I was just wondering, was it hard to learn how to trust a man again after the experiences that you had?
It was. I didn't trust right at first. And I'll be honest, the thing that drew me to him the most was his relationship with God. Because I knew that if I were to have a relationship with anybody, that God needed to be first in their life. Mm-hmm. And that would be... what would be essential for me.
Now, I know that you mentioned this, the statistic that 1 out of 4 women will face something like this in their lifetime. So whether it's those 1 in 4 or the myriad of people who surround them, what would you say to those people who surround them? How can they be helpful to someone that they see in a situation like this? What can they do? What can they say? Can they do anything to be helpful?
Yes, first thing they should do is educate themselves about abuse and the grip that it holds, because along with the statistics, is it the average woman, it takes her 8 times to leave and stay gone. So it is a long process to get away from a relationship like this. And too often, well-meaning friends and family will have somebody who's separated from a dangerous situation, and they'll say, if you go back, I won't be here for you next time. And that's awful to say, knowing especially that it takes so many tries usually for a woman to get away. So it's that, you know, undying love that says, whatever you need, whenever you need it, I will be there. And understand that it may not follow the logic you wish it would, but that someday that person could really need your help. So don't close the door. There is a website that I highly recommend, and it's www.thehotline.org, and they have resources for family and friends as well as for people who think that they're in an unsafe situation. And I would just recommend, you know, people learning about it, finding the resources in your own community. And if somebody confides in you, listen to what they say, because chances are they're only sharing the tip of the iceberg. And the fact that they would come to you and confide, they really need you as a support.
Yeah. Now, Susan, what a personal book. Just, you know, even in hearing you talk, the wisdom that you share in your story, how can people find it? We got about a minute left. I want to make sure that they know where they can find your book.
Sure. It is available online through Christian retailers or Amazon.com. Anywhere you buy books, it is available.
Well, Susan, nothing but the best with the book, and congratulations on the award last year. And we hope that it really does what you're hoping, not only bring healing to your life, but in the lives of many other people as well.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, blessings to you. What a powerful story.
Absolutely. Courage.
Yeah.
Courage.
Hey, we'll be back right after this break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll see you in just a few minutes.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Hi, I'm Fred Dreyer for Alpha Flex with Omega 5. When it comes to joint pain and inflammation, I'm an expert. I played 13 years in the National Football League. I've been hit and run over by the best of them. So when I have a flare-up, I don't want a painkiller. I want a solution. I've been taking Alpha Flex with Omega 5 for a long time now, and I'd be lost without it. It's powerful and natural, so don't settle for over-the-counter or prescription painkillers. Get Alpha Flex with Omega 5. It's the solution to pain and inflammation. Go to alphaflex.com right now and enter promo code DRYER. Order now and get free shipping and handling. And you can buy your first bottle at 50% off. That's 50% off, half the price. That's alphaflex.com. And don't forget to enter promo code DRYER, D-R-Y-E-R, for your 50% discount.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach. But more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Hey, welcome back. Happy Saturday morning to you, wherever you happen to be. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Beth, happy Saturday.
Happy first Saturday of November.
Happy first Saturday. You know, and I gave the kind of disclaimer before our last segment, and I'll do the same here. A little bit of a PG-13 show today. Mm-hmm. You know, we have them every once in a while, and so kind of some heavy topics today.
Yeah.
And so if you've got a little one in the car, you're off running somewhere, or you happen to be at home making some breakfast and they might be around or something, I would encourage you, most people don't do this, just go ahead and turn off the show. Mm-hmm. And you can pick it up on iTunes. We're going to be talking in this segment about sexual abuse and about abuse survivorship, and some heavy stuff. So we want to make sure you get plenty of warning about that. So Shannon Dietz is joining us. And, Shannon, I am famous for just killing people's names, so I hope that Dietz is correct.
You're doing great. It is.
All right.
Good morning, Shannon.
Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Shannon, part of what we like to do on Real Life Real Talk is to have conversations with our guests that then inspire conversations that our listeners have the rest of the day with the other people that are in their life. And the best way we know how to do that is to engage people in story. So would you start by telling us a little bit about your story, even as you have outlined it and exposed your first book? Would you tell us just a little bit about the context of why this is so important to you?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, I am an incest and date rape survivor. In Exposed, I discuss, the actual date rapes and how that affected me and how that came about. But I also highlight this sort of generational issue of abuse, that whole incest with the fact of, it was with my grandfather and, how it affected my sister and my mother. But in Exposed, I don't talk about how it affected me because, to be honest, I wasn't willing to go there and I wasn't quite ready at the time that I wrote that book just to face my own demons, if you will, in that regard. And so I didn't discuss that aspect in that book. The next book that will be released in June does go more into that because as an adult, I have been able to finally just grasp the concept of that happened to me. And so in Exposed, I go through just this, like I said, just how our family was affected by abuse, how I was affected just watching my sister, get involved in drugs and be sexually active because of what happened to her and how I so desperately wanted to save her. And then find myself in this own predicament of seeking love and in all the wrong places and not understanding why and then bad things happening to me that I did not deserve and ending up as a victim and being victimized and feeling as if I'm not worthy and I'm not good enough and being so caught up in that shame. But then finally recognizing God's hand, just reaching down to me and pulling me out of those ashes and saying, you were worth so much more than this. And to live as a survivor and to thrive and to overcome and know that, yes, we are all worth so much more. And what they did to me does not define me. What they did to me is on them. It is not on me. And so that is the purpose of Exposed and the ministry, just to bring people out of that shame and out of that pit and to recognize who they are truly and who God created them to be.
It sounds like writing your first book and now the second, as well as the new project you're involved with right now that we'll talk about in just a minute, has really been sort of a process of healing for you, kind of one step at a time, helping you with your healing in your own life. Can you be specific about how that has helped you? And then perhaps in general, what you might suggest to others is they've kind of left things bottled up inside, some steps that they might take to have a similar journey as yours.
Absolutely. Of course, it was definitely a healing process for me. When I first wrote Exposed, when I felt that I was called to just tell my story, I had been a youth minister for a few years already, bringing out my story a little bit, feeling more comfortable to talk about the things that had happened, what I had felt about myself, and recognizing that these teens and then eventually their chaperones and their adults, that were around them coming to me and saying, I had that happen too. And the more I talked about my story, the more it helped them free them from their story. And the healing part is about getting it out of you, exposing it, bringing it into the light and talking about it. And so by, telling that aspect of my story and Exposed and speaking about it all over the world, that is where the healing comes from, and that is the point of Hopeful Hearts, is to encourage others to, first of all, recognize I am not alone, and then to talk about it. To first, if you can only feel comfortable, but to talk about it to a friend and encourage you to get the counseling that you need and to work on it and not allow it to fester inside and to, keep you in that dark and keep you in that pit.
Hmm.
I have a dear friend who has a similar story as yours. And one thing that she and I have been talking about recently is kind of that first, like the first person she told and the first time she even thought she could forgive herself, the other person, you know, all those details. Who in your story was the first one you shared your secret with?
Oh, that is a good question. It honestly, I went to counseling. My mother forced me into counseling because, like I said, I was living as a victim. I felt so unworthy and so shameful. I was making some really bad decisions, and I was not behaving like a good person. And my mother recognized this, and so I wasn't going to talk to them. I just felt like nobody would get it and nobody would understand. And so she said, I don't know what's going on with you. And so they made me go to counseling. So for me, the first person was a counselor.
Mm. And it sounds like that played an important role, just again, being able to tell somebody that you could trust, even though that was a counselor, that having someone to bring this to the light, as you said, is just an essential first step to making this better.
Absolutely. It yeah. definitely is. Even if you can't get to a counselor or have a close friend or family member that you can talk to, write it out.
Yeah.
Write it out in a journal, but get it out and just expose it, mm-hmm. if you will.
Hey, before we get to talking about Hopeful Hearts, which is kind of your new project, your new ministry, I noticed on your website that 30% of the proceeds from your book are donated to the Maria Goretti Network.
Yes.
So I was curious, tell us about the network and why it's so important to you.
Absolutely. Well, first, may I say that everything
Please.
From the sale of the book, the charm, everything that my speaking when I lead retreats, all of that goes into Hopeful Hearts Ministry, which is a 501c3. 30% of the sale of the book itself goes to the Maria Goretti Network, which is a peer-to-peer support group. Just like, I guess it's not a 12-step program, but it is somewhat like that. It's peer-to-peer only of anybody that's been abused. And you go in once a month, and you just talk about where you are now and the triggers maybe that might come up on a monthly, daily basis and how you were able to handle them. And you're with other people that know what you're talking about, that you're not crazy, that, yes, the smell of coffee can make me, you know, react this way, and they get that. And then we focus on forgiveness, and that is what's so important is, you know, I'm finding it so hard to forgive. Please pray for me. And it's just a way of praying for one another, to encourage one another, to get to that place of forgiveness, whether it's for the perpetrator or for yourself. And to just know that, again, you're not alone.
As you equip our listeners in this story and in this whole idea, what would you say to them if they love someone that they suspect has been a victim? We only have a few minutes left, but what advice would you give them in approaching someone that they're worried or concerned about?
I would definitely, you know, make sure that you're in a place that they feel comfortable, that nobody else is around, that they might not, you know, trust or want to speak in front of. And then let them know, look, I love you. I care about you. I don't know what's going on, but, you know, I have a feeling about this. Please know that you can trust me. And say, I'm just here to listen, and let them talk. And then don't ask questions. Don't make them talk details. And then, you know, because I think often people won't talk because they're so afraid you're not going to believe them. And often those that have not been abused will think, well, why did you stay? Or why mm-hmm. didn't you tell? Or why did
yeah.
all those whys are bothersome? So just listen. Just be
yeah.
there to listen.
Yeah. Shannon, can you join us after the break for a few minutes?
Absolutely.
That would be great. We're talking with Shannon Dietz. She's she has a new book that's coming out in June, her past book, Exposed. And we're going to talk after the break about her new ministry, I Have a Voice. Just some great stuff going on with her. And as I said at the beginning of the segment, kind of a heavy topic today, but one that has to be talked about, right? Bring it to the light. That's a beautiful thing to do. So we hope you'll join us right after the break. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Who's Weaving Your Story? The Story Weaver series by Beth Guckenberger highlights the plight of orphans throughout the world in personal, heart-grabbing stories of loss, struggle, and redemption. The kind of redemption only God, the great story weaver, can accomplish. Written for ages 8 and up, Tales of the Not Forgotten and Tales of the Defended Ones reveal God's ability to create a story far greater than we can imagine. And the corresponding 6-part Leader's Guides on CD help turn each book's content into a simple yet powerful 6-week curriculum for any church or small group. Use both together and you have a 12-week curriculum full of fun activities, compelling stories, biblical teaching, and practical applications. Let God weave your story and see what He can accomplish for orphans worldwide. The Story Weaver series is published by Standard Publishing and is available at www.standardpub.com or your favorite Christian bookstore.
Hey, welcome back. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob. I am Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger on this fabulous Saturday morning. We hope you're doing fabulous, great, wherever you happen to be.
You're in the fall. I'm going on a turkey shoot. Go on a like.
Go on a turkey shoot. Come on.
It's November.
Let's go on a turkey shoot.
Start your Christmas shopping.
You're crazy.
Yeah, finish your Christmas shopping.
You finish your Christmas shopping for most people I know, which is also kind of crazy. Okay, anyway, back to the topic. PG-13 today.
Yes.
Just reminding everybody, a little bit of a heavy topic. We talked about sexual abuse and physical abuse in marriage during our segment before the long break. And now this past segment, and we're going to continue our conversation with Shannon Dietz, who has written a book, Exposed, and is going to have a new book out in June. Shannon, what's the title of the new book? Do you have a title yet?
It's tentatively entitled Redeemed.
Yes, Redeemed. All right, great. I wanted to spend a couple of minutes at least giving you a chance to talk about this set of videos that is part of your ministry called I Have a Voice. Could you tell us a little bit about those and how that came to be?
Absolutely. What's so funny is I had the thought once I saw the I Am Second videos, and it really hit me, because those are wonderful and powerful videos, that so many of us that are abuse survivors, you know, that's our biggest thing, is that we don't get to speak out. We don't have a voice. We didn't feel like that we had a voice. Mm-hmm. And many of us, obviously, you know, God has brought us up and lifted us into the light and has encouraged us, and this is why who we are today. But yet, the journey continues. The healing continues. And it's, you know, we still have things that might bring us down, but yet we're empowered because we're survivors. And I wanted these survivors that I knew personally at the time to have that voice and to say, look, I've overcome this particular abuse, and I'm still going, you know, I'm still working at it. I'm still a survivor, and I'm thriving. And so there's so many aspects in these videos that we try to reach, and I have a few more that are coming that I hate to say it like this, but I'm excited about, only because I'm just so happy to give these people an opportunity to have a voice. And the point is for others to hopefully watch them and realize I'm not alone. And if they can talk about it, then I can talk about it. I can have a voice too.
Yeah.
I really appreciate not only the title of your new book, but also that idea that it's not just about surviving, but it's about a thriving. And my day job is that I work with orphans around the world, and I'm always saying that when God puts broken pieces back together, they're often stronger than they were in their original form. And
Absolutely.
I love the heart and the passion that you have to communicate to victims that there is a restoration and a reconciliation and a redemption that's available to them. So we just appreciate your ministry and what you're doing very much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. You have a quote here. You say, I firmly believe that until a person speaks out, they cannot experience complete release from the grip of the past. And so there are people listening right now who are saying, yes, I've lived that story. I know what she's talking about. How would you encourage those people, and what does it mean to speak out? I mean, they don't need to speak around the world like you do, but What would be a way for them to say, yes, I can get complete release by speaking out? What would you tell them?
I would tell them, you know, take right now, like I said, if anything, just sit down with a notebook
and write it out. Because I think, just like I said, by getting it out first and foremost, you'll feel empowered even by that, just by putting it on paper. And then finding a friend, and burn that paper if you feel like you need to because you don't want anybody to see it or whatever it might be. But then find a friend, or find your husband, or wife, or whatever the case may be, somebody that you completely trust, and tell them, especially if you're in a marriage. That's what the next book is about, is going through this and being in a marriage, and how often marriages fail because somebody has been abused and they're not talking about it, so they're reacting and being triggered throughout their marriage. And so talk to your spouse about what you've been through. And then, you know, go to Ephesians in the Bible, Ephesians 5, 6 through 20, and read that, and take that for yourself. It, you know, embrace that passage about taking no part in the fruitless works of darkness, and expose them, because everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and you will be free, and you will be released.
Well, we talked about a lot of resources today. We've talked about Hopeful Hearts Ministry, your I Have a Voice videos, Exposed. Where is there a place where people can go that says, hey, I can see a little bit of all of those things? Is there a website or place where we can direct our listeners?
Absolutely. Go to HopefulHeartsMinistry.com. HopefulHeartsMinistry.com.
Yeah.
And I would love to have you contact me. I can, you know, work with you on the phone. I've worked with survivors all over the United States just by speaking with them on the phone, emailing. I just love, if you want to talk to somebody and you want to send your story and spell it out to me. I would love to listen because I get it. I get it.
Shannon, thank you so much for sharing your story, for being so vulnerable, and I know that it has and will continue to be a gateway to healing for lots of women. And our hope today on the show is that it'll be a lot of our listeners will begin to have that or continue to have that healing process. Thanks so much for being on with us.
Thank you, and I'm so blessed for the opportunity. Thank you both.
Thanks, Shannon. Blessings to you.
You know, one of the things I was struck by in reading and preparing for this interview is that they say that survivors of sexual abuse are 3 times more likely to suffer depression. And just hearing her talk about how releasing your story and communicating it and telling someone, whether you write it down or see a counselor or whatever, how that begins that path of healing, and how sometimes we'd just rather not know other people's hard stuff, right? We just, we think, I would rather just not know because I don't have to enter into it, or then I don't know what to do with what you're going to tell me.
I don't know what to say.
And it's hard for me to, it's just hard for me to watch you in pain, so I'd rather not even know about it. Let's just all pretend. And really, we just drive each other into deeper places of darkness, 3 times as many of them in depression. And could there be an outlet that we could offer to one another, kind of like a, to walk, I don't know, like a little bridge, you just, you walk them into the heart of the world.
Yeah, and I can imagine people who were listening saying, I don't know who to tell. And to have someone like Shannon say, hey, call me. Send me an email, write your story and send it to me. Any first step that a person can take, right, with a trusted source like Shannon or a therapist or, you know, somebody that you know can handle the secret, just begin to tell it. I got to tell you, I don't know how people do it who've been through situations like this without the Lord in their life. I just don't know how. As being a therapist for however many years, and I would hear stories like this, And I worked in non-Christian settings. The difference between those people who had faith and those people who didn't, it was completely different. I mean, the ability to say, I have a redeemer. I have somebody who, you know, I can believe in, who will take care of me, that has my best interests in mind, as compared to I've got to just figure out some way to get better. I mean, I don't know how people do it without some faith.
You know, one of the privileges you and I have with being on the radio show is we get to have conversations with all kinds of people. And sometimes just in preparation for those conversations, the information that we gather in order to have those interviews, I feel like benefits me long after the conversations are over on the radio. And I just was sitting here thinking, if our listeners today could have an action step to go find out, to go research 15 minutes on how to have a conversation, like get online, get on her Hopeful Hearts Ministry website, even if it doesn't immediately apply to you or to someone that you love, which it probably does, you just don't know it, but you know, deciding that you're going to invest 15-30 minutes in understanding that person's life experience will put in your little tool bag a little bit more f- for the moment when you might need to pull it out.
Yeah, I can imagine lots of conversations from this show. I mean, whether it's somebody who's listening saying, hey, I know someone who's been through this and I haven't been the greatest listener, or I've tried to ignore it, taking whatever that next step is and giving them a call or writing them a note or doing whatever to say, I need to hear your story. I know you need to tell me the story and I want to be that person. Mm-hmm. Any of those things, whether it's talking to your spouse about, hey, let's, in case we ever come across this, or just there's so many kinds of conversations where people could take one step to the next about how to be helpful.
And I was thinking about her book coming out in June, the idea of not being a spouse who's reactive in marriage, like as things trigger, then you react, but being a spouse that's taking a proactive place and saying, I want to heal what was broken so that it doesn't, you know, to my friend, I am always saying, I want to help you take the teeth out of the tiger so when it bites, it doesn't hurt any longer. You know,
yeah.
where that part of her story doesn't have to rear its head up in places she's not expecting.
Yeah. Some heavy stuff, but some important stuff to talk about. I mean, like Shannon just said, I mean, unless you bring this stuff to the light, it just stays down there, and that's where it gets you. It stays in the dark. And so we have to have these conversations on a regular basis, and I appreciate the show being able to do that because we do it on a regular basis. Hey, I didn't want today to go by without at least mentioning that tomorrow is Orphan Sunday.
Yes, it is.
And so we want to make a shout out and talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. All over the world. To date, I think there's something like 60 countries that have registered with the Christian Alliance of Orphans having some form of recognition or remembrance on this day. So all around the world tomorrow, people will be celebrating Orphan Sunday. And when you say celebrating, what you're doing is celebrating what God's doing in the midst of this reality around the world. I'm always saying, I don't want to talk about what man isn't doing. I want to talk about what God is doing. And that's what tomorrow's about, talking about how God is going after the 163 million orphans that are around the world.
Yeah. And if you need a little warm-up, I got to give a shout-out for Brian Stege, our friend who was on a couple of weeks ago, the director of the short film One in 163 Million. If you want to visit 163million.com, that's the number, 163000000. 163million.com. You can see the trailer for the short film that's going to be debuted tomorrow here in Cincinnati. It's about 12 minutes, and it's really a powerful thing. And so a shout-out to Brian. We're going to be debuting that film here in Cincinnati. But we hope that wherever you are, if you have a heart for the orphan, that you'll take some time tomorrow, whether at church or some other place, to remind yourself about what's going on around the world and how we can be helpful to the 163 million orphans in the world.
And if they like us on Facebook, they'll get information about what's going on with the film and where it will be released around the country.
That's correct. That's right. All right. So, hey, if you want to hear this show, any other show, you may know somebody who needs to know and hear about this some more. You can go to iTunes. You can go to our website, Real Life with Beth and Rob, or our Facebook page, Real Life with Beth and Rob on Facebook. Any of those places you can find resources. You can download the show from iTunes. Hand it off as a podcast. This is important stuff. We'd love for you to pass it on to your friends and family who would need to hear it.
Absolutely. On this first Saturday of November.
Great hanging out with you, Beth.
And have a great week.
Great hanging out with you guys out there as well. This is Real Life with Beth and Rob, and we will see you next Saturday. Until then, have a great week.